Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on Heritage Radio Network with me, your host, Erica Wides. And this is our new 1 o'clock time slot. Woo! So welcome, daytime listeners. It's nice to have you. I don't know if you're out there, but you can always podcast later. Anyway, I've decided that it's time for me to make a big announcement. Big announcement. Other than the obvious announcement that Let's Get Real is now airing live at 1 o'clock p.m. instead of the 6:30 time slot, my old home, the 6:30 slot, where this show and my previous show, Why We Cook, lived for the past 5 years, almost to the day. Yes, 5 years here at HRN. Thanks, Jack. He's clapping for me. One of the longest running hosts in the history of the network. Now, that's the minor announcement. The time slot changes. You know, it's minor. We'll all get over it. We'll deal with it. But it's a very important one, because if you miss the live show each week, how will you ever hear it again? Maybe you could set up a tape recorder by the radio and have your mom push the record button at 12:59 when she's just finished up the housework and right before All My Children is coming on at 1 o'clock, because that's what I would do if I were you. I would get her to do it then, because it'll be like before her first Valium of the day kicks in and she'll still be lucid. I mean, maybe one day we'll have technology that'll allow us to tape things off of the TV and radio at set specific times. That would be so awesome. But until then, do it on your little cassette player. But make sure you punch out those little tabs on the cassette so that your sister doesn't accidentally record America's Top 40 over it, because that always happens to me. Now, the reason behind the time change. The reasons were many and varied, but mostly it's because I joined a synchronized swim team called the Brooklyn Peaches. Yes, I'm a peach. And the practice for the Brooklyn Peaches is on Tuesday nights. And I wanted to be a peach. So I'm a peach now. And I'm really not especially good at synchronized swim yet, but I love it. And they're very supportive and inclusive. So I'm sticking with it. Kind of makes up for a lot of gym class trauma in the past. But being on the peaches, that's not it either. That's not the big announcement. Now, don't get all excited, because like, I'm not pregnant or joining the Navy or anything like that. It's more like an announcement of a realization I've come to, and an awareness or an enlightenment, something more like that. Now, I've come to the realization after all of this time and after all of this talking and reading and learning and figuring stuff out about food and nutrition and health and everything, that it turns out that A, we still don't really know what we're supposed to eat, and B, nobody really knows anything, including me. Now, by we, I mean Americans, because we are so young as a culture and as a country, and we're made up of immigrants who brought 1,000 different food cultures to this country, but then had them watered down into laughable, pale imitations of themselves, hello, Olive Garden, and didn't look back toward home for cues, but instead left our nutritional and health needs dangling, vulnerable, naked, and susceptible to the great American invention of big food / big agriculture, i.e. the clever guys who brought us not only billions of pounds of surplus grain and corns and oils, sugars and oil, but then invented a million ways to feed that stuff to us, whether directly in products or indirectly in animal feed. So, you know, the guys who invented commodity agriculture and the USDA food pyramid nightmare and fast food and junk food and foodiness. We kind of just left all our native, indigenous, thousand-year-old food cultures behind when we came here and said, okay, give us what you've got, America. Because before them, before that, and before them, and after that, sorry, before all of that, in other older cultures, like back in Europe and in Asia, and places that didn't have big ag and big pharma and big food up until recently, you had thousands of years of food culture behind you, and you ate your traditional diet, which was based on whatever grew around you, whatever you could get within that 20 or 30 mile zone. You know, whether it was a diet based on seal blubber and dried berries, which worked and provided all the nutritional needs of the people who ate it, or coconuts and coconut fat and chilies, which also worked for people. It worked for you because it was just real food and 100 generations before you had eaten it. Now, sure, of course, foods moved around the globe due to trade and exploration and, of course, colonization. But they were still foods. The Spanish may have brought pigs to the New World and brought chilies to Southeast Asia, but the ballast of their ships when they returned wasn't made up with pallets of snickerdoodle-flavored Chex Mix. They may have been filled with people, although not Soylent Green kind of people, live people, but at least we weren't eating the people yet. Now, all of that happened really recently, the ships full of snickerdoodle-flavored Chex Mix. Of course, that all happened pretty recently, like within the last 80 years, and it all started here in the good old USA. And now you can go almost anywhere in the world and see the same global brands, the same giant sodas, the same KFC, the same Denny's and McDonald's and Pringles and Kit Kats and Oreos, induced obesity, diabetes, heart disease, American way of living everywhere. China and India now have higher rates of diabetes than we do. Haha, you're welcome, world. So you take places where literally billions of people have eaten basically the same food for thousands of years, and in the course of one generation, you change that completely, and you make them all sick. Again, you are so welcome, world. But, oh, by the way, also, we have drugs to treat your new Western illnesses, so you'll be fine. Don't worry. What's that? You can't afford our drugs? Oh, because you were a farmer, but your government stole your land. Oh, or a giant chemical company forced you off of it. Oh, so now you work in a factory making Crocs and Barbie dolls? Oh, well, sorry. Here's a pair of factory second Crocs in appreciation of your good work. You can eat lunch across the street at KFC. So anyway, as I was saying, when it comes to food, we don't know anything. We can't trust our past because we really don't have one here. And when I or someone like Michael Pollan says, only eat food your grandmother would recognize, that doesn't fly anymore because your grandmother might only be like 60 and she could have easily been raised on TV dinners and Tang. Maybe your great-grandma remembers real food, but who's got a living great-grandma? Except Manny, the old maintenance guy where I used to teach, who had a baby at 15 who then had a baby at 15, making him a grandpa at 30. And easily a great-grandpa by 45 and a great-great-grandpa by 60. Hello, Planned Parenthood? Is anyone there? Sorry, I digressed again. So what do we know about food and health? Basically nothing. As my grandmother would have said, bupkis, which means beans, by the way, which is a good answer. Beans are kind of the answer. Everything we think is right is wrong. All the dogma that we swallowed whole from the last 50 years of so-called research sponsored by Big Ag, Big Pharma, and the USDA, it's all wrong. It's like I said a few shows back, welcome to bipolar America. Fat is good. No, fat is bad. Whole grains. No, no grains. Dairy. Yes, dairy. No. Canola oil. No oil. Protein, protein, protein. Vegan, vegan. Iron, folate, probiotics. None of us really know anything. Except not to eat shit and not to eat foodiness, of course. Now, if you just stick to the real stuff, I don't think it even really matters that much what you eat. Just eat food and a lot of vegetables. That's the one thing we all seem to agree on. All the health gurus, all the research, all the scientists, all the diet people eat a lot of vegetables. And that's the one thing that we really don't eat very much of here in the U.S. Although, by we, not the ones not eating, but we, the ones we can all agree on, I mean us media and food nutrition science types, of course. Michael Pollan's best quote about this ever was, "Eat food, not too much, mostly plants." And I think that about sums it up. But what he left out of there is butter, because I think butter is going to turn out to be the cure for all the world's major diseases. Now, why did I choose today to make this announcement? Why have I come to this startling conclusion? Well, stick with us after this short break and you'll see. We'll be right back.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food with me, Erica Weitz, here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And this is our new 1 o'clock time slot. In case you're confused, you just turned on the radio and you heard my voice and you thought, who is that? It's me. So, do you know what a circaseptin rhythm is? Jack, do you know what a circaseptin rhythm is? No, shaking his head. You went to NYU. You're well educated. No, they didn't teach you that. Okay. Did you know you had one? Well, most of us do if we live in the modern business world. The circaseptin rhythm is the 7-day-a-week cycle, the one that we follow, generally speaking. It's the one, you know, where your week has 7 days and your week's rhythm is based on that. So the week begins for most people, not really on Sunday, but on Monday, because Monday is the day to start the week, the day to start again. It's when you hit the reset button. It's where you say, okay, whatever happened over the weekend, I'm just going to forget about it and I'm starting everything today. People make the most doctor's appointments on Mondays. They tend to get the most done on Mondays. Now, my circaseptin rhythm is slightly off because I don't work Monday to Friday anymore or 9 to 5 anymore. So I'm not totally circaseptin-esque, but Mondays are still Mondays. I just don't dread them anymore. I used to suffer from terrible Sundaynitis, the awful dread that would start creeping up on Sunday morning and build throughout the day as the Monday school day or work day approached. No more Sundaynitis for me. I finally, after 40 odd years of Sundaynitis, I'm free of it. I've been cured with massive antibiotics. Since my weeks don't have the same Monday to Friday structure, I don't long for the weekend anymore. And it works actually just fine for me. It's really not a problem. I actually like it better. And actually, because I do this show on Tuesdays now at 1 o'clock, that seems more like the beginning of the week for me anyway. And did I mention that I'm doing it because I have to go to Peach's practice? Were you listening? Okay, just making sure. Now, part of the Monday dread that I used to feel was related to the fact that I used to do lap swimming on Monday nights. I mean, it was related to the fact that I had, you know, 16 odd years of school behind me and I kind of hated every minute of it. But in my adult years, the last few, I would go to lap swimming on Monday nights. Now, I knew how to swim growing up. I always loved the water, but I was never really a good swimmer. So I decided probably 7 years ago, I need to become a better swimmer. So I signed up for this swimming skills class, and then I just kept taking it over and over and over again. But it was a swim skills class for triathletes, for triathlon training. So it was full of crazy competitive New Yorkers. You know the type, right? Like me, but much crazier, full of them. And theoretically, I was supposed to be enjoying this activity. I mean, I did it by choice, but all it did was make me feel like the slow, fat, unfit kid again. And it gave me flashbacks of being the gasping kid in the pool full of fast swimmers in general, metaphorically speaking. And I got frustrated, and I also got really bored because, you know what? Lap swimming, it's not social. It took me a while to figure that out. You can't talk while you lap swim or laugh because you'll drown. But at Peach's practice, you can do all of that between moves, and it's very sociable, and everybody's very nice. And so that was a big change. And through Peaches, I've met people who've created opportunities for me, opportunities like playing the voice of two different hamsters in an animated iPad game for kids, which was great. But also through Peaches, I got involved with the Monday campaigns. And I'm also not bored out of my skull in the pool anymore. So all good. Back to the Monday campaign. So the Monday campaigns, if you've never heard of this, is the organization behind Meatless Mondays. Now, Meatless Mondays has been around for a while. I'm sure you've heard of this. There's been a lot of press and a lot of media. But Meatless Monday, if you don't know what it is, simply means that on every Monday of the week, the beginning of your circa septin rhythm, you refrain from eating any meat. Simple. All they're asking is that people don't eat any meat one day a week. It makes an enormous difference in people's lives, in the planet, blah, blah, blah. We know all this stuff. Now, given that not many decades ago, people probably only ate meat like one or two times a week, not three times a day, every day, it's not really asking you much to give up eating meat for a day. Really, one day? Now, you know me well. You've been listening to me for 5 years now at 6:30, but now at 1 o'clock. And you know that I'm no vegan or even vegetarian, but given that I've decided that we basically know nothing about food, there are one or maybe two things that I think we can all agree on. All sides can concur on, except the vegans probably more than concur, that it's that eating less meat and eating better meat when you do is good for everyone, everything, and the planet. We all agree on that, right? Raise your hand. And the second thing, of course, is eating more vegetables, which I cannot emphasize enough. Now, I read an article yesterday about high school kids around the country now sending angry tweets to Michelle Obama because they're blaming her for their school lunches changing to require a fruit or a vegetable. And if they don't take the fruit or the vegetable, there's nothing they can have instead. And so they claim that they're starving because they have no other choices left because there's no more tater tots or extra pizza. So they throw away the fruit or vegetable, throw it away, or just don't take it. And then they tweet mean things to FLOTUS. How about just bringing your lunch, huh? I mean, that's what I did. And Michelle Obama, by the way, has nothing to do with what's actually being served in those school lunches. That's all the USDA and other people. It's not her. Michelle Obama just wants us to get up off our asses and do push-ups so we can all have arms like hers, which I'm aiming for. Why tweet mean things to Michelle Obama? What did she ever do to you? She's just trying to help, like me. You don't have to tweet mean things to me either. Not that people do. Except when my Chopped episode reruns, and then I get mean tweets. So cut the crap. Now, if you'll remember way back. Part of the reason why I started this show was because I saw an Oprah episode where her entire staff, including Oprah, decided to be vegan for a week as an experiment. And everybody freaked out and wailed and cried and complained. And they all thought that they would die. And their kids cried and wailed and complained and thought they were going to die. But then they brought in a vegan propagandist nutritionist who told them to buy all the processed soy foodiness crap like fake meat patties and soy sausages. And then once everybody filled their shopping carts with that stuff, they were okay with it. Because the processed shit made from corn and soy and wheat designed to look like meat was only a few mere processing and labeling steps away from the other processed soy, corn, and wheat shit that they'd been eating before, including meat. Now, she never suggested that they just eat more beans and lentils and bupkis and vegetables, which are full of protein. No, it was just swap out the processed meat products for the processed soy products. And I got so mad at that episode that I came up with Foodiness and Let's Get Real was born. We all know that. Now, unfortunately, Oprah ended her show before I could write a Foodiness manifesto letter to her, have her invite me on the show, and then have her offer to produce the TV version of the show, and now I'd be living large with my new BFF, Oprah Winfrey. Oh, well. So back in the pool at Peaches, I met this lovely woman named Emily Oppenheimer, who told me that she works for the Monday campaigns. Oh, that's great. The Monday campaigns, you're the guys who started Meatless Mondays. And I told her about the show, and I told her the story about how I started the show because I was mad at Oprah, and she loved the story. And she asked if I'd talk about Meatless Mondays here on the show. So here I am talking about Meatless Mondays, even though it's Tuesday. The reason they chose Monday is that Circaseptin rhythm thing, because people start things fresh on Mondays. Like I said, it's the day you press the reset button. Web searches for things like healthy food spike like crazy on Mondays. So it made perfect sense. That and the convenient alliteration. Meatless Monday. Wheatless Wednesday. That's wheat. Wheatless Wednesday. How about foodiness-free Fridays? Really, that should be every day. Foodiness-free. Now, we overfed Westerners, we eat almost 190% of the amount of protein we actually need. Or so they say. And now, like, who knows if they are right? Who knows what's right? Maybe that's totally wrong, too. Maybe we need 3,000% of the protein we're eating, or maybe 3%. We don't know that. Maybe that's totally wrong, too. But I think we can all agree that the industrial production of meat, non-grazed feedlot meat and chicken, is about the worst thing that we can do for our planet, along with fracking and burning coal, of course, and driving Escalades and catching all the tuna. But meat production is really bad. We all know that, right? I mean, this, come on. We've been talking about this for 5 years now. Everybody else on the network talks about it. It's not new. We all know it by now. If you don't know this by now, you're going to have to go back to the minnows class in lap swimming class and start all over again with me. All right? But Meatless Mondays and I, together, we're not pushing the vegan agenda, just to be clear. We're not, because I'm not. They're not. What we're saying is just eat less meat. And when you do eat it, make it better meat. This is what I've been saying all of these years. Grass-fed beef, grass-fed lamb, pastured chickens, goat. Eat more goat. Goat is the meat of the future. I've done whole episodes on goat. Can we please start eating more goat? It's the most widely eaten meat in the world, except for here. Goats are awesome. They eat weeds and brush and blackberry vines, so they can, like, clear out all your brush, you know, hang out there with George Bush clearing brush down in Texas, and then we can eat them. Plus, they sound like old men screaming, which is actually kind of charming. Some goats live on a field behind my little tiny bungalow, and I like to listen to them. It sounds like someone's killing a bunch of old men. Or perhaps if you know a hunter and you have a source for game, like venison, even better. You should be eating all of those guys. We need to get back at the deer for eating everything that I plant and giving everyone I know Lyme disease. Those fuckers need to be eaten. You should eat as much deer as possible. Now, I love wild game. Too bad I don't know any hunters who have shows here on Heritage who used to give me venison but haven't in a long time. If I could eat wild game and grass-fed lamb and goat exclusively, I would. I don't need anything else. Chicken, beef, I don't need any of that. I mean, I guess I could, actually. I would just have to commit to the expense of it. Right now, I'm not making that much money, but, you know, I'm very thrifty, as you know. For example, I got a pound of grass-fed lamb a week ago, and I made it into chili. Now, I made that 1 pound of grass-fed lamb into 8 meals in my chili, my lamb and bean chili, fed 2 of us 4 times. You just stretch it out with a lot of other stuff. The chili was mostly beans and tomatoes and peppers anyway. There was just enough lamb in it to make it taste good and give it texture. That's what grandma's did. Well, not mine. Great-grandma's did. My great-grandma, she probably actually never saw a black bean in her life, but I'm sure she would know what to do with a pound of ground meat. I don't think they had black beans in Odessa during the early part of the 20th century. I don't think so. Other beans, bupkis. But you say, you protest, but Erica, grass-fed meat, it's so expensive. It's so costly. I'm not going to spend $20 for a pastured chicken. Well, it's your body. It's your life. How much do you spend on your hair? How much money do you spend getting your hair done? How much money do you spend on hair products, hair care, hairdressing? Come on, tell me. I look around out there, Roberta's. I see a lot of expensive dye jobs, let me tell you. You'll drop $4 a pop on a coffee drink without batting an eye, or $14 on a cocktail, a fucking handcrafted artisanal my ass cocktail. But ask someone to spend that same amount on a burger, and they look like they want to kill you. Think about what goes into producing that meat, all the time and water and land and investment. And it's shocking that the grass-fed burger is only $14. Not that I want to pay more. And I love the mommies who spend nearly $1,000 on an infant stroller and another $500 on a car seat to protect their precious progeny as they drive around in the Prius. And then they feed them chicken nuggets and booty puffs and baby yogurt with 35 grams of sugar. How about protecting them from the inside, too? So we know nothing, really. Or that's what it seems like if we listen to all the talking heads out there, including me. I'm just as guilty. I don't know anything either, except that we do. And I do. We know to eat less meat and to make it better meat, grass-fed and pastured when we do eat it. Eat more plants, but fewer processed grains. More fruit, but not juice. Real fats like butter and lard and olive oil and coconut fat, not refined, industrially processed vegetable oils or shortenings. More plant proteins like beans and lentils, which are super cheap, too. I bought a 10-pound bag of lentils at Costco for like $7 a while back. And if you're really lazy, Trader Joe's sells pre-cooked lentils, a pound and a half for $1.99, which is robbery compared to the dried ones, but still ridiculously cheap. Yet again, bupkis. There's no excuse for not eating produce either, because you know how I love that supermarket discount produce shelf? You can too. I like the challenge of it, the treasure hunt aspect. But more and more pre-cut, pre-washed stuff, and even pre-cooked stuff like those lentils, is appearing on shelves. And while it's a tremendous waste of packaging and resources to process it, package it, and ship it, if it means people will eat more of it, then waste be damned. Even your great-grandmother would approve. And so do I. Now, even though I don't know anything really, I do know that I feel the best when I eat the most plants. Literally, like Popeye, I can feel the spinach power coursing through my veins. My biceps pop up with little anchors tattooed on them, and I can punch out Brutus and rescue every olive oil who comes my metaphorical way. I love my plant foods just as well, too, because now I'm consulting in a new plant-based casual quick-serve restaurant. I cannot give you any details yet, but I'll be heavily immersed in vegetarian and vegan menu and recipe development for at least the next year. And that's great. That's fine with me, because it means I can buy, cook, and eat all the stuff I love, get paid for it, and write it off as a business expense. Now that's smart and thrifty. Maybe I can be Meatless Monday's poster girl. So, if you can't fight your circoseptin rhythms and you feel like maybe you just don't know who to listen to anymore, other than me, and you still really, really don't want to eat shit, especially industrial meat shit, then you know what to do. You need to keep on listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Remember, you can always follow me on Let's Get Real Show. Sorry, at Let's Get Real Show on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. Check out HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are member supported. Please join and support us. All our shows ever are on that website, HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My website is letsgetrealshow.com. You can also find all our shows ever on iTunes. And I think that's enough. All right. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.